that I used to know. Most never adjusted to the great big world. I see them lurking in bookstores, working for the public radio. Can the babies around the sack on their back, moving careful and slow. It's money that matters. Hear what I say. It's money that matters in the USA. All of these people are much brighter than I. They would flourish and thrive, but they barely survive. They eke out a living. They barely survive. When I was a young boy, maybe 13. My father, he didn't know. I talked to my friend, he didn't know. I talked to my brother, he didn't know. I talked to everybody that I knew. It's money that matters. Now you know that it's true. It's money that matters. Lived up on the county line. I was washing his car with a friend of mine. He was a little fat guy in a red jumpsuit. I said, that looks kind of funny. He said, I know it does too. They got a great big house on the hill. Light wife inside it. Great big pool in my backyard. Another great big pool beside it. Sunday is money that matters. Hear what I say. It's money that matters in the USA.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. Peter Jennings in London.
Matt
Robinson in Chicago. And from our desk in Washington. From ABC,
this historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-end jobs.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Okay, that's
That's what happened. I had the audio from the video going, and we had a loop, a feedback loop. Sorry about that. What a way to start the day. Welcome to a Thursday. I'm Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. If you tuned in for the pre-show music, you heard a bunch of songs about money, wrapping it all up with Randy Newman's It's Money That Matters in the USA. And boy, is that apparent as we've been watching the details, such as they are, of Trump's tax thing. It's not right. That's what, who called it a thing? It was, what's his name? Ali Velshi, because it's not really, oh, I didn't pull it because I have it in What's News. It's not really a tax plan. It's a one-page proposal. It tells us, basically, that you and I are going to get screwed, but Donald Trump is going to make out like the bandit he is. You know, that's the way of the world. This guy, I hope the people who voted for him are realizing what a shell game this has been, right? He pretends that he pretended during the campaign that, oh God, and I don't have this clip either. I'm so unprepared today that it was going to be, I'm distracted because I see people telling me there's still no YouTube coming to the Roku YouTube channel. I don't know why, because the YouTube is on. So if you come to Nicole, well, if you're watching on Roku, then you're not online. Sorry about that. There's it's a concept. Thank you, Fantoma, in the chat room. It's a tax plan concept. It's not really fully vetted. It's not fully planned out yet. I'll tell you the best. I'm just going to do this. We're going to play some of what's his name, Mnuchin's tax. His press conference that he and Cohen had trying to explain to the reporters what was in this so-called tax plan. And it's, I'll wind up interrupting it a few times because it's really annoying to use a word my daughter likes. So let's just play some of, actually what I'm going to play for you is not the press conference. Boy, am I scattered today. Steve Mnuchin went on Good Morning America, and George Stephanopoulos really grilled him. You'll see, I'm going to play a segment of their interview, and it starts with one of Dump's pronouncements.
Are you guaranteed that no one in the middle class is going to pay more?
That's hard.
Okay, the question was, can you guarantee that no one in the middle class is going to pay more? Got it?
Objective, absolutely.
That's the objective.
I can't make any guarantees until this thing is done and on the president's desk, but I can tell you that's our number one objective in this.
Sure it is.
How about the wealthy? During the campaign, Mr. Trump told me that he thought taxes on the wealthy should go up. Listen, bottom line, do you want taxes on the wealthy to go up or down?
They will go up a little bit, and they may go up, you know.
But they're going down above, in your plan.
No, in my plan they're going down, but by the time it's negotiated, they'll go up.
Sure. Okay. So during the campaign, there was one point, a clip that I thought I pulled, but I can't find it, where he was asked, should taxes be raised on the wealthy? And he said, yes. Yes, they should. Taxes should be raised for you? Yes, absolutely. And boy, how things change now that he's in office, huh?
Does that still hold when the negotiations are done? Taxes on the wealthy will go up?
Well, again, the focus right here is lowering the top rate in return for eliminating deductions and special interests. And that's what we're committed to. And this is about making tax simpler and getting rid of special interests. We're way too tired of people having special interests and making sure that we create investment.
I was asking
country.
About the impact of taxes on the wealthy. The president said
you go,
thought
George.
The taxes should go up after the negotiations. Right after the elections, you said no absolute tax cut for the upper class. Any tax cuts would be offset by fewer deductions.
Uh-huh.
Are you still promising no absolute tax cuts for the wealthy?
Again, what I'd say, that's the objective. But we're working with Congress, we're working with the House and the Senate, we're having listening sessions, and this is about turning into a bill that will get signed.
And what they're showing on the screen now is the one page, 2017 tax reform for economic growth and American jobs. American jobs, my ass. This man is so full of shit. But then again, he worked for years at Goldman Sachs. So what do you expect?
But the objective is no absolute tax cuts for the wealthy.
That's the objective, and we'll see where we get from here.
We know that that several of the provisions have the potential to benefit President Trump in a pretty big way. The elimination of the estate tax for his family, cutting the tax on pass-through businesses from 39.5% to 15%, eliminating the alternative minimum tax. So this plan right now would be a tax cut for President Trump, wouldn't it?
Big league.
Well, let me just say, this isn't about President Trump's tax returns. This is about the American public's tax returns.
Yeah. But we know
this is about creating economic effect for small and medium-sized businesses and making sure they have the same opportunities as large corporations.
But we know from the last Trump tax return we've seen, that was back in 2005, it shows the potential effect of eliminating
the alternative minimum tax,
which you're calling for right now. That year, he paid $38 million in taxes on $153 million in income. Without the alternative minimum tax, he would have paid $7 million. That's less than a 5% rate. So is that an acceptable outcome under your plan, that someone pay less than a 5% rate?
Again, eliminating the alternative minimum tax, which is part of this proposal, would have cut Donald Trump's tax bill in 2005, the only year we have his tax returns, because it was sent anonymously to David K. Johnston. We're like, we don't know who sent it, Donald, because it makes him look good that year because he paid a lot of taxes. But if they cut the alternative minimum tax, instead of paying $38 million, he would have paid $7 million. His tax rate would have gone... it would have been 4.5% instead of like 29, which is still too low. But and listen to this Mnuchin try to weasel his way out of this question.
More than $150 million in income?
Again, I'm not going to comment on the specifics
of course
that.
You're not.
This is really about.
But I was asking about the principle.
American
is on the
jobs.
Principle 5% rate on $150 million in income. Is that okay under the president's
plan? Again, let me just say, we're going to get rid of lots and lots and lots of deductions.
Yeah.
So making assumptions as to what the impact on any person's individual taxes, until we get out the details, I don't think makes sense. This is about getting rid of deductions. For too long, the rich have had special interest in deductions. And what we're going to do is lower the rates to spur capital investment. And that's what this is about. Let me tell you that the ordinary worker bears about 70% of the tax burden on business. So by lowering business tax, we're putting money back into the American workers' pockets, and we're unleashing the economics so that American businesses can be competitive, build manufacturing plants, and create jobs.
But the only
Trump plan is about jobs.
The only deduction
Bullshit.
You specified is getting rid of the state and local tax deduction. I just want to ask you one more time on this. The principle.
Ask
this
him
is
again.
The principle.
Yes.
Should someone making more than $150 million pay less than a 5% federal tax rate?
Again, the principle on this is getting rid of deductions.
Bullshit.
And having fair taxes and simplifying taxes. That's
Bullshit.
What this is about. This is not about the president's taxes.
Yes, it is.
This is about what's good for the American public. And let
Bullshit.
Me assure you, what the American public cares about is creating jobs and economic growth. For too long in this country, economic growth has been substandard, and we're going to grow it. This is about
All right.
getting to sustain.
Enough of this.
Bullshit.
Yeah, because this guy Mnuchin, I got to tell you, during his press conference, it was funny. Let's say laughable, because he makes these excuses. For instance, he was asked about again the question, when is the president going to release his tax returns? And you'll notice he's about to say he has no intention of releasing his tax returns, and he catches himself. He gets it halfway out, and then he's like, "Oh shit, what did I just say?"
The president releases tax returns, so that.
The president has no intention. The president has released plenty of information and I think has given more financial disclosure than anybody else. I think the American population has plenty of information.
No, we don't. And in fact, I think it was earlier in the interview with George Stephanopoulos. I'll have to post the whole thing on my blog along with today's show where I post the podcast at NicoleSandler.com because he asks him about that. And Mnuchin cannot give a straight answer. I'll tell you, I found one of his tells. He uses, okay.
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 Okay. This I pulled it like three times.
Okay.
Yeah. No, not okay, okay. Mnuchin. So I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll listen to today's What's News because it goes into greater detail of the other crap that's in this tax thing It's a thing. Ali Velshi calls it a thing. That's what it is. It's not a plan. It's not a proposal. It's a thing. But more of the details on the thing are in What's News, along with details on the healthcare thing and other things, too. So we'll do that, and then we'll be back. Maybe take some of your calls if you want to talk. We'll get into net neutrality today as well. Oh, God, it's a weird Thursday, isn't it? Maybe it's just on my part. If so, I'm sorry.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On Wednesday, the White House released a one-page outline for changes to the tax code that Trump described as
the biggest, the reductions massive, the reform package the largest in history.
But what is it actually, and what does it do? NBC's Ali Velshi told Chuck Todd,
this isn't tax reform, this is just a tax thing that increases the deficit, and this old canard that somehow we're going to grow our way out of it. Last summer in New York at the Economic Club, Donald Trump said that his tax plans are going to cause the economy to grow 4, 5, or 6%. Chris, we're at 1.6%. Virtually nothing short of war causes a mature economy to grow that much. I have a better chance of growing a full thick afro than we have of getting to 4, 5, or 6%. So we just have to accept this is what it is. It's a deficit financed tax cut. End of story.
Okay, so who would benefit from it?
First off, the plan bears little resemblance to populist middle class warrior Donald Trump that he branded himself during the campaign. There are tons of items that wealthy individuals have been lobbying for. The top income rate, slashed. The alternative minimum tax, gone. The estate tax, gone. Corporate taxes, cut by more than half. And that's just to name a few. To be fair, it's not all geared towards just the wealthy. The standard deduction at the lower end gets doubled. There's a one-time tax on overseas profits that could be used to pay for some things, including this tax cut. There are also commitments to close loopholes for the wealthy, although, like much of the plan, the details are fuzzy, and no doubt intentionally so today. Bottom line, this appears to be a tax plan full of policy and political landmines that the White House doesn't yet want to touch.
Sadly, it's money that matters.
And of course, it would benefit Trump's family and businesses, but would probably hurt the middle class.
We are going to eliminate on the personal side all tax deductions other than mortgage interest and charitable deductions.
That means your deductions for state and local taxes, student loan interest, tax preparation fees, medical and dental expenses, job searching and job-related expenses, and lots more would all be eliminated. There was actual breaking news on CNN Wednesday night.
The headline is that Trump agrees not to terminate NAFTA at this time. He spoke with the Mexican president. He spoke with the prime minister of Canada. The statement said the leaders agreed to proceed swiftly according to their required internal procedures to enable the renegotiation of NAFTA deal to benefit all three countries.
Should I stay or should I go?
But just earlier today, we had guidance that he was going to sign some sort of agreement to get out of NAFTA on the 100-day mark of his presidency. So what is going on here?
But that was then. This is now. This is Donald Trump. Look, this is in some ways as head-spinning as so many of the reversals that Trump has undertaken. He was going to name China a currency manipulator. On day one, he said,
didn't do it.
He talked about how going to be, get much tougher on trade with the Europeans, didn't do it. He talked about how NATO was obsolete and he essentially seemed to be threatening to pull out of NATO. He didn't do it. Obamacare was going to be repealed. That hasn't happened. There's no money for the wall. The NAFTA piece is actually stunning because this was a centerpiece of his worldview. Donald Trump's worldview is that America has been losing, 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 and most importantly, has been losing a trade. And NAFTA, if you recall, almost every campaign stop, he said NAFTA was the worst trade deal ever made in the history of this country. So what Donald Trump has now said, not 100 days into his presidency, that after having concluded for 10 years that this was the worst deal America ever made, he's going to keep it.
All 100 members of the Senate went on a field trip to the White House on Wednesday for what seemed like a sad attempt for the resident to get a nice photo op to mark making it through 100 days in office. Senator Tammy Duckworth seemed perplexed about the purpose.
I seriously felt like I could have gotten all that information by reading a newspaper. I did not see any new information coming out of that briefing
at all. It felt more like a dog and pony show to me than anything else. It's quite remarkable that they bussed 100 senators over there, and then the very same team that briefed us came back with us to the Capitol to brief the 400-plus members of Congress. When I talked to some of my former colleagues in the House, and they said there wasn't anything new in their briefing either.
And finally, the zombie GOP America's Health Care Act is back. The Freedom Caucus, you know, the remnants of the Tea Party, was against it the first time around because it didn't kick enough people off of their health care. The new version allows states to opt out of essential medical coverage like maternity care or mental health and to charge exorbitant rates for pre-existing conditions. Mo Brooks spoke with Katie Turr on MSNBC on Wednesday to explain why he now supports it or not.
I'm tickled pink that the Freedom Caucus has been able to give states the power, the authority, to fit their health insurance policies according to the needs and financial abilities of the citizens of those states.
What about those who are in other states who do have a pre-existing condition? Maybe there's a child with cancer or a family member who is suffering from a heart disease. What do you say to those who are not in a state that has decided to protect them?
This bill still has a lot of imperfections. I'm hesitant to vote for it, although I'm a lot closer to yes than I have been.
From tickled pink to hesitant to vote for it. Just like that.
And just like that, we're at day 98.
100 days. We are 6.8% of the way home. Paid for by anybody else 2020. I got
good. If you appreciate What's News and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. We are 100% listener supported and we need you. Find out how to help at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
These are the sounds of crushed souls, the sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
Speaking of helping and donations, I need to throw this out there because a very generous, wonderful listener who would rather remain anonymous, I'll just say she's from the Midwest somewhere, has offered another matching donation. So she will match between now and the end of May. All donations, all new contributions up to $500. So if you make a contribution to the Nicole Sandler Show between now and the end of May, it will be doubled by this very generous, wonderful listener of ours. So if you can afford it, and that's what I always say, if you can't afford it, that's the reason I don't put the show behind a paywall, because I know there are a lot of people like us who are still hurting out there. And so, but there are a lot of people who are doing very well. Thank you very much, Steve Mnuchin, Donald Trump, anybody in this administration. There are people who are doing well. And if you are and enjoy the show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. All right. In a few minutes, we're going to talk net neutrality and the internet. Howie Klein can't be here today, so we'll do that. But until then, we'll take some phone calls. I think this is an international call. Hi, who's this?
Is this Nicole?
It is. Who's this?
Good grief. Bless your heart for taking the call. This is your Zapatista revolutionary super uber fan down in southern Mexico, Tulum. Tulum.
Yes. Are you in Tulum now?
I got back 3 days ago after 10 days there, and I was thinking about you, and even oh, this is silly, but I organized a little prayer service for you on the beach.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
Well, you know, yeah, Lisa, it's me. Couple of things. Yeah, of course, it's just you worried about Thursday now. Could only be you, right? Can't be. Yeah, we're all freaked out. This is crazy. This is, it has now become our own little personal nightmare nation. That's what I call it now. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening. It is. Yeah. It's nuts. I mean, you just heard what's news between the tax thing, whatever it is, between what they're trying to do to health care, which thankfully the only good news is it won't happen. But did you hear the what they put in there to make it acceptable to the Freedom Caucus that states can opt out of covering pre-existing conditions, or actually they can charge you a hell of a lot more. They can charge older people, that would be me, up to now five times more instead of just three times more.
Nicole, that would be me.
Well, then me too.
You're a young thing compared to me.
No, I'm not that young.
You are. But just don't know it yet.
Well, yeah. Once I hit 55, it was downhill from there, and a couple of years past that. No, thank you. I don't want to. They're just making it more heinous so states can opt out of what they call essential medical needs, like, you know, the things that Obamacare put in there to make sure that you weren't buying a worthless junk policy. People were like, well, I had a policy and it only cost me $10 a month. Yeah, but it didn't cover anything. So
this is not a tax plan, Nicole. This is grand theft larceny.
Well, these are two separate things. There's the tax thing, and then there's the American health care plan that now they may get it through the House because of the Freedom Caucus. So then Dump can say, see, I got a victory, but it'll never, ever pass the Senate. That's my only saving grace right now. It's why I'm not worried about it.
Oh, God, I hope you're right. I don't know. I just don't put anything through these nefarious little nitwits.
No, me either.
They're just, you know, too much altogether.
Hey, can I tell you something that happened in Mexico when I was in Tulum? People know I broke my foot, right?
But I want to get a question, one little question. Yeah,
you got it. I will save time for you. So I broke my foot, right? I broke the fifth metatarsal bone. And when I went to the hospital...
How is your foot?
My foot's fine. It's healed. Everything's good. Oh, hold on. I just lost my camera. When I went to the hospital, they did the x-ray. The bone was broken, but it was a spiral cut, so it didn't snap completely. Thankfully, I didn't need surgery. So they gave me this little shoe, this little shoe boot thing, so I could walk, sort of. It's on a rocker, so they don't do casts. You know, I was at the beach. Thank goodness they didn't do a cast, because it would have been even worse.
Yeah.
So... They charge me for this thing $350, right? So it's like, all right, well, I'll just put in a claim to the insurance. And of course, before I left, having just battled cancer, you know, a few months earlier, I wanted to make sure that I'd be covered if anything happened in Mexico. So I knew I was covered. So I pay for this. I pay for the x-ray and the doctor visit and all that. They denied payment for this boot. By the way, when I saw the orthopedic guy here, he looked at the boot. He said, well, first of all, that's the wrong shoe they gave you. And I used the boot that I wore when I broke my other foot a few years back. Something about that bone.
Oh, I keep that as looks like a good-looking sandal.
Right, doesn't it? Except what they told me at the doctor's office.
Oh, dear. Well,
they pay,
have to shave the sole.
Hold on. They pay $35 for this thing that they charged me in Mexico $350 for. And the insurance company said, that's not covered.
Oh. Well, everything's an act of God, isn't it?
Oh, God. It's amazing. It is just amazing. It's like a comedy of errors. Life in the 2000s has been a comedy of errors. So
you know what I've been thinking lately? You read Kurt Vonnegut's Welcome to the Monkey House?
I love Kurt Vonnegut, one of my all-time favorite authors.
We're in the monkey house.
Yeah, we are.
And
we most certainly are.
Around every time they get snippy. You know?
Yeah, I keep waiting for Kilgore Trout to take me away from it all.
I hope this works for you and all of us. Listen, a quick question, and I don't know if this is off subject. Bunch of people are going bazooto over the Sino-North Korean Friendship Treaty. You know about all that, no doubt.
The North Korean Friendship Treaty? No, I don't know about it.
Yeah, it's signed between China and North Korea. Well, North Korea.
Right.
And it guarantees that if North Korea is attacked by anyone, China is obligated to attack back.
Oh, really?
Do you think Trump knows anything about this?
I think Trump knows nothing about anything. You know, and as much as I'm not impressed with the people that he's put around him, At least the military people understand the consequences. And I think even though they may be warmongers, look, they're the ones who dropped the mother of all bombs on Afghanistan because they did it without his knowledge. You know that he didn't know because he's like, oh, you guys just do it. Yeah, you do it. But they understand the consequences of war. And that's the difference. Yeah. Trump, you know, he had his...
I think I can give you and me and pretty much anybody listening or who cares a little bit of hope here. And this is a true story.
Okay.
I'll go as fast as I can here. My sister had a roommate in college, Lake Erie College for Girls, blah, 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 eons a year ago. Her roommate was, a girl named Betty, and her father was a U.S. Navy admiral, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my family and all got invited to the big... He was the then admiral, but he was a captaining also the Coral Seas aircraft carrier, which was nuclear-powered, right?
Mm-hmm.
You there?
I'm here.
And so we had this big lunch in this disgracefully fancy captain's quarters. You don't even want to know. I mean, awful, just beyond luxurious, five-star plus. And he was saying, my father and he got in the conversation, and Admiral Blesch was saying, Dudley, he said, you don't have to worry about a nuclear war. He said, the people at the top may be crazy. He said, but we are not. He said, there are so many levels that must be passed through. It's not that one big red button, right? He said, it ain't going to happen. Relax.
Yeah. Did you hear? Wait, so far, I just got to interrupt. Did you hear about Trump's red button? He actually has a red button on his desk. Do you know what it does?
I hope it's self-destruct.
No, and this is not a joke. Not a joke.
Oh, the Coke, you mean?
The Coke.
You mean the Coke?
He has a red button that
really
if he pushes, I believe it's true, that somebody brings him a Coca-Cola.
Oh. People are talking about it as Coke, you know.
I know.
So
Anyway, I wouldn't doubt
Admiral
that either.
I would only say that name because he's dead now. But Admiral Blesch was very encouraging to my whole family, particularly my father. They knew each other. And, you know, he said, you got to stop freaking out at this stuff. He said, somebody in the process will stop the process. Nobody wants to have their children turned into cinder and ash. He said, it's just not going to happen. Now, do we know that this is true? Of course we don't. But it's maybe some little teensy-tatsy bit of hope we can hold on to, because maybe sane people will, persist and succeed. We just have to hope. You know,
we have to hope. The thing is, I think he could conceivably get us into a nuclear war by mistake. I mean, I think he's just such a doofus. His stupid tweets that he just does in the middle of the night when he's on either a Coke high or, you know, how he thinks it's Adderall or something.
Oh, no question about it. No question.
He could easily. I do think that even the most... that's interesting. Tom just did a segment on sodas possibly causing premature brain aging into play.
Oh, dear.
Said that in the chat. And I don't doubt it. Look, he eats junk food. He lives on like McDonald's. And remember for Cinco de Mayo, he held up a taco bowl as if that's Mexican food. For somebody who has such money, he has very...
God,
I know. You're down there.
Food down here is so freaking good.
And your phone lines. Can I tell you something? It sounds like you're next door, although your phone line, your connection is clearer than it would be if someone called me from inside this house.
It's my fabulous voice, darling. What can I tell you?
It is that, too. Well, thank you for the call. Thank you for cheering up my
day.
Yeah,
I thought I'd just call and annoy you from San Cristobal because I really do adore you. We all do. I fight on. Fight for us. Fight for yourself. Fight for all things good. It's what we got to do.
It's what we got no choice, do we?
That's it. No.
All right. Well, thank you,
God
honey.
God bless you.
You too.
God
bye-bye.
Bless.
Yeah, Mexico, I'll tell you. I could use another Tulum fix. When I got back from Tulum, I was all peace and zen and, you know, meditative and yoga. And now I'm back in my, you know, major depression mode. It held for about 2 months, which for me is a long time to go without a meltdown. And I'll tell you, the last couple of weeks have been rough. A lot of things adding to it. It's all the circumstances, you know. It should be easier, but I don't think we'll get to that point. All right, I want to change focus a little bit, but sort of stay the same in that, you know, everything this administration is doing is the opposite of what we want to see done. So a few years ago, I met a woman named Sue Wilson, who she produced a movie called Broadcast Blues, and it was about the way our airwaves had been at radio. My career was always in radio. I've been in radio since, I hate to admit it, but 1978. In college, I started working at the campus radio station. And it was WUSF at the University of South Florida. And I worked, I did the, it was a classical station. This is how backwards Florida is, right? WUSF, big 100,000 watt NPR station on the campus in the student services building. And the station did not broadcast for the students. It was for the Tampa Bay area. It was classical with a little bit of jazz at night. And when I was there, student government said, hey, you know what? We want some student programming. And we got 4 hours a week of rock and roll that eventually I got to take over. Thus, my career began. So I've been doing this since 1979. And though you may not know it now, I've had some really good success. For 15 years, I was on the air in Los Angeles, had a great career. It wasn't, and I started out after college in talk radio in Tampa. Then I moved to New York, where I produced for Bob Grant. So I've worked with the craziest of the right-wing nut jobs. But back then, the station I worked with Bob Grant at was WMCA. And it was what talk radio should be. There was a news block in the morning, which was news. It wasn't left-leaning. It wasn't right-leaning. It was a news wheel. It was the morning news. Then there was a radio psychologist. Then there was the, you know, the money guy. Then there was Barry Gray, who was the station liberal, who also did show busy stuff. It was while I produced his show that I got to meet Lucille Ball when we did a remote from Elaine's restaurant on the Upper East Side. Then there was, then there was Bob Grant in the afternoon, who was the right-wing crazy, who Joe Pine was his idol. You know, he was the precursor to Rush Limbaugh and those nut jobs, and I used to stand up to him. Somewhere I've got an audio clip of me, 23-year-old Nicole, in the booth, and he said something, offensive, and I gave him shot him the bird. And I have a clip of him talking about I was telling him that he was number one. you know, things were different back then. Barry Farber was on that station and Sally Jesse Raphael and, you know, all those dinosaurs, most of whom are dead now. But that's what talk radio used to be. And it wasn't. And then I got into music radio and I was out of talk radio for years. And it wasn't until I moved back to Florida in 2004, I think, that I got back into talk radio. And by then, everything was so separate. It was segregated. There was right-wing talk radio, and there was liberal or progressive talk radio, and never did the two meet. And so I saw this movie. I was introduced to this movie, and maybe Sue even reached out to me and said, here, please watch this. It's called Broadcast Blues, and it was about how the airwaves had been taken over by the right-wing crazies. Well, Sue Wilson is a filmmaker. That was her movie. She's a broadcaster. In fact, we found out that we both worked at different times, but at the same building, the old Columbia Square building in Los Angeles. And she's the director of the Media Action Center, which you can find at mediaactioncenter.net. And I think she's on the line. Sue, are you there?
You bet, Nicole. And boy, oh boy, people of America, look out.
Yeah, you know, so now here we are, it's 2017, and not only is, you know, our left and right separate on the radio airwaves, but left has virtually disappeared from the radio airwaves. There are maybe a handful of stations left. From the time you did, when did you do Broadcast Blues?
The film came out in 2009, although
wow.
I started it in 2005.
Wow.
And look at it. Here we are many, many years later, and what's happened is it's gotten only worse.
Yes.
And look, your listeners have to understand, they are doing this to us on purpose. They are trying to silence the progressive voice and feed us with a pack of lies so that they can control everything. You know, I saw all these people come out and do protests about the Obamacare. Folks, this is the issue you ought to be protesting more than anything else, because if we lose the information fight, we lose it all.
Yes.
We lose it all.
You know, so today I'm on Twitter, as I often am, and I see Sue, whose Twitter handle is Sue Blues Wilson, which you got your Twitter handle right after you made the movie Broadcast Blues. That's where the name came from. And you said, here's a piece I wrote for the Sacramento Bee about net neutrality. And you tagged Ajit Pai, who's the new chair of the FCC, who wants to do away with net neutrality. Anyway, please consider, and I'm reading this piece, and I didn't realize you wrote this in 2014.
Yep, you're right, because that was when the Democrats were considering whether or not they should do something about net neutrality. Now, do your listeners really get what net neutrality means? It's such a dumb name.
Right, I know some do, but why don't you? Well, but it actually explains what it is. It's the you know, all things are equal on the internet, but why don't you explain it in better, you know, detail than that?
Well, you know, bottom line is that the GOP are trying to paint net neutrality as government takeover of the internet. That's not what it is. Those are lies.
This is all that people are created equal on the internet. That's what they call government takeover?
Yeah, I mean, when it's meant to prevent a corporate takeover of free speech on the web. That's what this is. And what's happened over time is that our free speech has been chipped away and chipped away and chipped away to where only right-wingers get free speech. You and I don't get to have free speech. And what they want to do now, and when I say they, I'm talking Ajit Pai, who is now the chair of the FCC, under Donald Trump, what they want to do now is take away our free speech rights on the internet.
Yep.
And so they're passing rules to do just that. Folks, it's time to occupy the FCC. We've got to take action.
Now, you say this as someone who's done just that. You know, the FCC has these periods of public comment, and a lot of people have, you know, I remember back this 2014 fight, a lot of us weighed in. We went to the FCC website. We wrote our comments. But you showed up at hearings, you personally, Sue Wilson, right?
Well, I showed up at hearings, but those were really on the other side of this. You know, for your listeners, we're talking right now about what they could do to the internet. But what Nicole was talking about earlier was what they already have done to broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, once upon a time, there were equal time rules. And
yes,
if you were going to be talking right-wing junk on the air, you had to give equal time to people to talk about liberal views, progressive views, and to debunk the lies. Purposely, and you got to go back to this, they've done this to us on purpose. Ronald Reagan took away those rights of ours.
Mm-hmm.
They said, no, you know, let the right wing just tell their lies, and if you want to tell the truth, well, get an act of Congress. These are our publicly owned airwaves. So, yeah, I went to hearings about that, and this relates today, too, because Ajit Pai at the FCC is trying to create more consolidation of the broadcast media. For folks who don't get what this means, once upon a time, one owner could only have 3 AM and 3 FM and 3 TV stations across the nation. Today, you can have as many radio stations as you can buy. Now they're trying to loosen those rules more to give one owner the opportunity to own TV, radio, and newspapers in the same town. What does this add up to? It adds up to mind control.
That's right.
That's what they're after. That's what we've got to stop now.
The fewer voices out there, the more dangerous it becomes, the more authoritarian a nation we become. You know, I often talk about Berlusconi. The way Berlusconi got elected in Italy was because he owned the media. This is, you know, Donald Trump was what he got elected because his face was always on the fucking television. He who controls the media controls the narrative, and that's where we're seeing it play out right now.
It is so scary, Nicole, and you're right. I mean, you look at Donald Trump and how he got elected, no question. But what bothers me most is that people, Joe Average out there, doesn't seem to see this. They know there's something wrong with the media. They don't seem to understand they have any rights. But we do. This is our publicly owned airwaves, and this is our internet. The trick is, you know, as we saw Congress people getting protested over the changes to the American
the Affordable Care Act.
We saw people storm Congress over that issue, and that is why the GOP was stopped from just steamrolling us.
Mm-hmm.
We need to wake people up and go, our media is the key to having freedom in this country. We have got to start storming Congress on these issues as well.
So let's, Sue Wilson, let's go back again, and because I think I interrupted you, which I tend to do. I apologize. So net neutrality means that everybody is equal on the internet, means that the little old Nicole Sandler show that emanates from her messy office in her house over, you know, the best cable internet connection she can get in this development that I live in, I have the same access to speed as, you know, Verizon or AT&T, that they can't slow me down. They can't put me in a slower lane and put somebody willing to pay more in a faster lane. Basically, you can go as fast as the wires can carry you. I'm waiting for fiber optic to be installed in my part of the neighborhood. They have it down the street. Well, we just don't have it here yet. If net neutrality is defeated, and that's what AJ Pai wants to do, is get rid of net neutrality, then, you know, podcasters are us. You know, conform by Verizon, and they can charge everybody a fortune, and they can pay more for to go in the fast lane. So you would be able to tune into somebody on Podcasters or Us, whose stream would be great. You wouldn't have the spinning circles on YouTube. There wouldn't be the buffering. They'd be pristine, and then they could slow me down. They'll stick me into the slow lane. And I'll be sputtering along to the point where you're going to go, I can't deal with this shit. I'm going to go find somebody on Podcasters or Us. Is that a good analogy, sort of?
Yeah, I think it really is. I mean, and you know, it starts with the fact that most of us, we love the internet just the way it is right now.
Yes.
So why do they want to change it? Well, and, you know, Google, Microsoft, AOL, eBay, they all love the internet just the way it is right now. The only people who want this change are the internet service providers, all right? And what they want to do is they want to charge people to be, like you said, to be in the fast lane. What does this mean to real people? This means that you want to tune in to hear Nicole Sandler. You're sitting there with your cup of coffee. You've waited 20 minutes, and you can't get the thing to load.
Right.
But if you want to go over to Netflix, who's charged paying a bunch of money, well, yeah, that's going to come up really fast. And what that does is it makes the people with the money have the power to go fast, and you don't have the patience to wait for the people who don't have the money and power, so you're not going to get to hear those voices.
Right.
It's wrong. It's a First Amendment issue. We just got to take a stand.
So back in 2014, when there was this whole campaign to convince Obama, who wasn't great on the subject either, but finally came around because we were loud, there was a period of public comment where we could all weigh in, right? But it was a fight. It was a brutal fight. And now, are there going to be any public hearings, or they're just going to go, nope, never mind, we're reversing this, no more net neutrality. We're going to divide the internet up into fast lanes and slow lanes.
You know, I don't know for sure that there will be comment hearings. There may be, but here's the problem. When you have the GOP in charge of the Federal Communications Commission,
mm-hmm.
they don't pay attention anyway.
No.
They just, you know, it's like our friend Brad Friedman made a beautiful graphic, said, you know, we're not listening. Hello, we're the FCC. You can talk, but we're not listening.
Uh-huh.
And that is what they do. There's got to be a way to start holding this agency, which is, you know, the people who run the agency are appointed by the president. There's got to be a way to start holding the bureaucrats at that agency responsible to we the people.
There's got to be, but I don't know that there is. We're living under a virtual dictatorship right now. Where, you know, they're just doing stuff with the rudest of impunity. I don't know that that even makes sense, but you know what, you get the gist of what I'm trying to say. I really don't know that we have any recourse in here up until 2018, which is to vote the bums out.
Well, you know, and certainly voting the bums out is the most important thing, but you know, We've seen success by people joining together and standing up and shouting. And that, I think what we've got to do is start educating people that this is the most important issue. This may be more important, dare I say, than what they want to do to Medicare. Yeah, they want to privatize Medicare. I had a conversation with my GOP congressman. They want to privatize Medicare and put it onto a tax credit system.
Oh, God.
Now, you tell people that, and they're going to get up in arms.
Yep.
But here's the thing. If you don't know about it, if you didn't listen to this show today and get this inside scoop from me, who happened to talk to my GOP congressman and got it from him, how are you going to know this? Because they're not going to tell you.
No, they won't. But there's to quote the great Joni Mitchell, don't it always seem to go, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And that's the thing. People don't realize. We've come close to, you know, now that people have gotten health, and healthcare is a different animal because it affects all of us personally in the most in the most intimate and important of ways. As someone who's just gone through cancer, believe me, that when I hear that they're going to take away my health care, my ears perk up because holy shit, if they take away my health care, they may as well just kill me because, I need insurance, right?
Right.
But this is something different. And until it's gone, People don't seem to understand the importance of it. Then once it's gone, they get all pissed off. It's, oh my God, what did you do to my internet? Well, you got to pay attention now. And we've had this fight and people do get involved. But here's the Trump administration is so heinous across the board in so many ways. It's like, oh my God, you look over there. No, look over there. No, look over there. No, look over there. There's everywhere you turn, there's something horrific they're doing to us. Not for us, but to us. And it's like, which way do we turn? I think it's the old adage, you know, you throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. In this case, they're going to throw everything against the wall and figure one or two things may not stick, but most of it will because people can't pay attention to it all.
Oh, they're masters of media manipulation. And, you know, Nicole, you and I have been around the block in this broadcasting business long enough to have seen what has gone away. And, you know, when I was showing Broadcast Blues, the people who really got it and who really got up in arms are the older generation because we remember how good it used to be.
Yeah.
We know what's been taken away. The
like
younger
when
folks,
I, when
and
I mentioned
I'm younger,
what,
I'm,
what WMCA used to be, a little bit of everything on one station. That's how it should be.
Right. And so at this point, you've got people who are, I'm going to say, 55 plus who get it. And you've got all these younger people who don't really get it because they don't know what they've lost.
Right.
But I'll tell you this. Now, we all know that we had a preponderance of, quote, fake news on Facebook, on the internet, okay?
Yep.
And we know, of course, we can get into Russia, but without going there, why is it that people are so prone to believe this bullshit today? It's because for more than a generation, we have been conditioned by the GOP operatives named Rush Limbaugh, named Sean Hannity, all of these, they call themselves conservatives, but they're really right-wing propagandists.
That's right.
Who have gotten a sizable percentage of the population to start believing this stuff. Now they float this stuff on the internet, and it's very, very easy for people to just join in and go, oh, wow, look what Hillary's doing now. She's a monster, and share that. And all of this stuff was lies.
And then it goes on the internet. It's like the old I tell two friends and he tells two friends and so on and so on and so on steroids, right? With the internet, with Twitter, with social media. But it will work for us too. If you spread the word, net neutrality is being threatened, is almost over. If you enjoy watching what you want to watch on the internet, you need to get involved. And I guess the best places to start are at freepress.net or at savetheinternet.com or at Electronic Freedom Frontier, EFF.org. There are a number of organizations, and I'm sure they're all getting in on it. But we need to start, somebody's got to take the lead here and spearhead a massive campaign or we're going to lose our access to the internet waves. Sue, while I have you here, and before we run out of time, I want people to understand that it is possible to fight back against the big behemoth and be successful. You took on not only a radio station in Sacramento, California, but one of the big radio companies, and there's only about six of them left, soon to be five, if the news I read yesterday about the former Clear Channel, now, you know, iHeart Media. That's what I call them, iHeart Media, because they did. You know, that they may not be around in another year because they're so over-leveraged. But there was a radio station in Sacramento that a lot of people might remember this story, had a contest. And as a former promotion director, I get that they did this. When the Wii was really hot, they did a contest. What, hold your Wii for a Wii? What, can you explain what happened with this and how you fought back?
Well, bottom line, the contest was that they were going to have people drink 8 ounces of water every 15 minutes, and the last one who could hold their Wii would win a Nintendo Wii. The trouble was, well, first of all, the station knew that this could be a deadly contest. There was a kid in our own area who had died 2 years earlier of water drinking in a fraternity stunt.
Oh,
so
God.
They knew. Second, they did not inform the contestants that it could be dangerous. They actually listed a bunch of hazards on a release form and then hid that release form in a drawer and gave everybody a generic release form. During the contest, as nurses were calling in saying this could be deadly, people could die, they would not allow the contestants to hear that. Then they doubled the amount of water, which made this, you know, going from a stupid stunt to really a deadly stunt. And then when somebody died, get this, when somebody died, what they did was her friend called her, a coworker called the station and said, Jennifer Strange has died. She was one of your contestants. You should call the other contestants to let them know their health may be in danger. They called Entercom's legal department back in Pennsylvania, and instead of the general manager went to the station manager and said, don't call the contestants. Instead, start calling lawyers. That goes to the character of Entercom. They deserve to lose all of their licenses, and I wish I could have done that. But what we did was we actually did take away the license from this station. They couched it that they gave it up because, oh, they will have too many radio stations in the Sacramento area when they merge with CBS
right.
Radio.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in point of fact, you don't give away a $13.5 million license. You sell that license if you can. They needed to get me out of the way so that they could do this merger. So they surrendered the license. That got me out of the way. I'm still here to say that the good news is we've proved that there is a public interest in broadcasting, and everybody needs to remember this. We own broadcasting. It's ours.
Right, but people don't understand that. And now, because so many people get their broadcasting, you know, from things that are not over the air, because it's on cable. Well, cable's not regulated by the FCC. It's on the internet. The internet now is regulated by the FCC, but not the way that it is on broadcasting. The public airwaves are a thing unto themselves. It goes through the air. It is ours. And, you know, I studied, and my degree is in broadcasting, and I remember my broadcast law class. I took one summer, that's all I did, because it was a hard class. But radio and television stations, when they don't own the frequency, they are awarded it. They essentially lease them from the government, but they hold the license. It's the license that's the valuable piece there. And in order to retain their license, they used to have to prove that they operate, and here's the legalese, in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. And they used to have to go out and do what was called ascertainment. They would have somebody from the station, somebody in a management position, have to go out into the community in which this broadcast entity was licensed to serve to ascertain what the important issues were and then prove how their programming addressed those issues. Because broadcasting on a local level is a local utility. It's supposed to serve the local community. And now the whole idea of locality in broadcasting is like a dirty word. And earlier you talked about the fairness doctrine, the equal time. That was the fairness doctrine. If you're going to talk about this issue, you need to present both sides of the story. That doesn't exist anymore. One thing that sort of exists is it's not even equal time. But for candidates, if you have an election going on and you have one candidate on the air, you still do have to offer time to the other candidate. It's why when Donald Trump was on Saturday Night Live, they had to offer the other candidates the same amount of time. It is an equal time requirement to actually come on the air and give their message. But I don't think anyone took them up on it.
Well, you know, the candidates need to realize it's up to them. They have 7 days from the date of broadcast to go to the station and say, I want the equal time. It's not up to the station to offer it. It's up to the candidate to ask for it, and then the station must give it. And it has to be equal. If Donald Trump gets 12 minutes on Saturday Night Live, they are going to have to give 12 minutes of time in an equal time slot to the candidate. But to any candidates that are listening, it's up to you. You're the ones have to get to the station and
say, the station doesn't even have to reach out. I remember at WMCA writing a note to Pat Buchanan. I don't even remember why, but offering him equal time for an issue that we discussed on Bob Grant's show and getting a very nice letter back from him. All that's gone. There is no more fairness. There's no more, except for the Orwellian type at the fake news channel. So we've lost so much. So the moral of this story is get involved, protect your media, because the media, as what we enjoy of it now, might soon be gone.
Nicole, my telephone is dialing into TiVo, and I'm sorry for that. I just want to say, America, 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 fight to retain our free speech. Never let them take our free speech away.
You got it. Sue Wilson, find her on the Twitters at Sue Blues Wilson and at MediaActionCenter.net. Sue Wilson, thank you so much for your activism and for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
And thanks for being you, Nicole. You are a gem.
Thank you so
a
much.
A national treasure.
Thank you, honey. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye. So there you go. Protect your net neutrality, because pretty soon it won't be here. We'll be back tomorrow. The one, the only Greg Palast will be here. So don't forget to tune in. We'll talk about how, what happened in Georgia, what happened in Kansas, what happened in November. Since we started with money, I'll leave you with money. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye, everyone.
woman will sell her precious body for a small piece of paper. It carries a lot of weight. For that me, green, almighty dollar. Talk about. Got to have it, I really need it.